The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Heineke Digital presents The Mark. Who's Afraid? An audiobook podcast by Christian Heineke. Chapter 2. Abbey Road Dreams. Ruth liked the Lüneburg Police Department. The simple building was in the city's north. In her role as chief inspector, she strove to make Lüneburg safer, or so she hoped. She knew security was just a weak facade. Ruth also believed that illusion before Leonie vanished. She may help out again. She stopped briefly in the cold by the front door, adjusting her wild hair. After presenting her badge at the gate, she left her service weapon behind and gained entry. Red Ruth would plead, so Enki would bring her into the investigation. That was, roughly, the plan. "Forget it," Enki said. Ruth stood before his desk in the small office that had once been hers, feeling disconcerted. The conversation wasn't going as she had hoped. Sighing, she exhaled, causing one of her red strands to float up. "Enki." He continued to look over some transcripts, pretending she had vanished. When he looked up, he seemed surprised that she was still there. Ruth detested this kind of game. She hated Enki. "What are you still doing here?" he asked. Men were just boys who had outgrown their childhood clothes. Otherwise, they changed little after their 8th birthday. "Jesus, do I have to get down on the floor and beg?" "Believe me, on any other day I'd entertain that, but right now I have a little boy's murder to solve." Ruth felt her frustration boiling over. "That's it then?" She clenched her fists, on the verge of losing control. Enki's smug grin only fueled her anger. "I guess so. Have a nice day, Schutzpolizisten Marx." Ruth could no longer contain her rage. "I believe there's a connection between the boy's murder and Leonie's disappearance. Can't you see that? Don't you understand? All I see right now is a former detective superintendent who tucked her non-existent tail 2 years ago and now regrets writing traffic tickets." Ruth leaned against Enki's desk, trying to keep her voice calm and matter-of-fact. She almost succeeded. "You're making a huge mistake, Enki. You know it. I can help you. I don't want any credit. I just want to help catch this killer." "You want to help us, Ruth? Then deal with the teenage speeders in Bardowick." Ruth had a retort ready, but she clenched her teeth and walked away. Enki was right. Who was she trying to fool? She was no longer with the CID. "We've got everything under control here, Missy," Enki called after her. The man, often referred to as the Old Scratch in certain circles, stood on his balcony, enjoying the view of Lake Starnberg. It was a beautiful winter day, and as he stretched, he heard some bones crack. His young wife didn't appreciate that sound, so he made it a habit to go out on the balcony for his morning stretches. As he stretched again, the familiar cracking returned. He grinned. He preferred younger women. Money and experience easily impressed them, and his passion often surprised them. Once he had dated a psychology PhD student. During an awkward moment in a restaurant, she pointed out that he not only struggled with strong, experienced women, but was also afraid of them. He recalled a provocative situation that had unfolded on Goebel's office desk, smiling at her question. "I am not afraid of anything," he had replied. He preferred women who focused only on meeting his primary needs. The doctoral student had looked at him in disbelief, then flushed with anger and told him where he could put his primary needs. She had then poured an excellent Merlot over his face and stormed away. He had laughed until tears streamed down his cheeks, prompting the head server, irritated, to ask him to calm down. I'm cold, Robert, came Irina's voice from the bedroom. He stepped back inside, closed the glass door behind him, and looked at her. She was Russian, a vision of femininity. Noticing his gaze, she pulled the sheet over her bosom. Still not enough? She asked with a sigh. Intrigued by the weariness and fear he sensed in her voice, he still knew when to let it go. He sat down beside her and she edged away. He leaned in and gave her a gentle kiss. Actually, I was just thinking we should have breakfast, he said, flashing her a grin. But if you insist, my dear. No, she cried, jumping up and rushing into the bathroom, where she stepped into the shower. I'm already sore. With a full moon, you act like an animal. I'm flattered. No, honestly, she exclaimed, poking her head out from behind the shower curtain. You are turning 70 this year, yet you make love like you're 30. He grinned, still flattered. She giggled before disappearing back into the shower. In truth, he was turning 90 this year, but only he and a document in a Swiss safe deposit box knew that. The man and the beautiful Irina had breakfast on the terrace, where the weather had warmed. He devoured 6 scrambled eggs, bread, and fried ham. After a night under the full moon, he always felt like he could eat a whole horse. Think about your cholesterol, Irina scolded him, her concern genuine. While she loved spending his money, she also cherished sharing her youthful life with him. In over 30 years, Irina was the first woman he considered revealing his little secret to. Maybe he should also show her the small secret room in the basement, but he pushed that thought aside. Except for him, no one had ever returned alive from that room. Irina tweaked his nose. Hey, I'm talking to you, old fossil. He pulled her onto his lap. Your breakfast tastes so good to me now, darling, he said, beaming. Touched, she kissed him and then left him alone again. He opened the morning paper and found a brief report in the miscellaneous section about a child's murder in Lüneburg. The news of the boy's brutal mutilation gave him a slight sting. Lüneburg. That's where it all ended. More coffee, darling? Irina asked. His radiant smile returned. With pleasure, my love. Gunther sat in the driver's seat of the RV, waiting. The soft whimpering of the child in the makeshift compartment in the spacious Heimer motorhome irritated him. The space was a converted storage area between the washroom and the fitted kitchen. He had modified it with hinges and a magnetic lock, creating a hiding spot. But this situation was becoming complicated. Sighing, Gunther set aside the Hustler magazine he had been reading and moved to the back. He opened the compartment, and the terrified eyes of a 7-year-old blonde boy met him. The child was restrained and unable to speak. Gunther noticed the boy had peed himself. He was already driving the child 400 kilometers across the country. And just when he wanted some quiet, this happened. Really, couldn't you have controlled yourself? He said coldly to the boy, whose name he didn't even know. Losing his temper, Gunther struck the child. The impact caused the boy to hit his head against the wall, rendering him unconscious. The boy would have a visible injury around his left eye that would need attention later. Gunther closed the compartment door and returned to his seat. Troublesome, he muttered as a Renault Twingo pulled up in front of him at the gas station. Gunther's expression changed. The sight of another child in the back seat of the Twingo caught his attention. 2 likely targets. He saw this as an opportunity, and a wide grin spread across his face. Marita Cornison was running late, and she despised being late for a job interview, especially since opportunities had been scarce lately. To make matters worse, none of her friends had time to take care of Alice. Just fantastic. Sometimes she loathed being a single mom. But now it felt too late to change that. Her soon-to-be ex-husband had been fun with his secretary. The memory of that ultra-slim woman with a tongue piercing and a tramp stamp made her grab another candy bar and place it on the counter. What the heck? Anyway, something had already ruined the day. Oh, and another pack of red gauze, please. The man behind the counter nodded, and she handed him her debit card. He slid it into the reader, but a dissonant beep indicated a problem. Oh, please don't, she thought. Had she really spent that much this month? Sorry, it doesn't seem to work, the man said with practiced friendliness, glancing at her. She felt her cheeks flush. Do you, by any chance, have a credit card? Marita wanted to sink into the floor with shame. In the backseat of her mother's Twingo, Alice watched as Marita rummaged through her purse in a hurry. It was typical. When Alice visited her friends' houses, she noticed their mothers didn't seem as fearful. Alice felt fear, but payment never caused it. She feared spiders and the monsters lurking under her bed. Even knowing the monsters were supposedly more scared, Alice couldn't shake the feeling something sinister lurked under her bed. Her mommy always warned her about evil people. No, that wasn't quite right. Evil men, who looked like people but in reality were monsters. These monsters, she said, were not afraid of children at all and could be cruel to them. A large, tall car slid past on the right, blocking Alice's view of her mother's worried face. The driver winked at her, but Alice quickly looked away. Mommy had said she wasn't allowed to talk to strangers, and something about that wink unsettled her. This man was likely one of the evil men her mommy often warned her about. However, a quick glance revealed he wasn't so terrible after all. The man made a funny grimace, and Alice couldn't help but laugh. He laughed, too, seeming quite nice. No, she thought, this man was not a monster. Finally, Marita heard the reassuring rattle of the cash register. The small green display on the reader flashed payment made. The gas station attendant looked at her with empathy. You see, it's not so bad. Marita could almost feel herself explode with rage at her ex-godfather for delaying the child support payment yet again. The woman he was with would lose interest if he showed up in bed without his genitals. Just don't go there. Just. Does anyone belong to that kid running around out there? Gunther asked. Marita scanned the area around her car, but a large RV blocked her view. She glanced at the monitors the gas station attendant used to keep an eye on the pumps, but they offered no clarity either. Crap, she cursed, storming out of the store. Hey, wait, the gas station attendant shouted. Your credit card. Gunther climbed into the RV and started the engine. Slowly, the RV moved, revealing her car. The child seat in the back was empty. Alice had vanished. Marita noticed she had taken Teddy, her little stuffed bear. Had she gone to the bathroom? Was she looking for her? That damn card, that jerk, that damn Mia. Everything was. The camper. Alice had once hidden in a truck because she liked the big steering wheel, as she later said. Rudiger had been bursting with pride while Marita had died of fear. Marita ran after the motorhome, waving her arms and pounding on the driver's side. The vehicle stopped and Gunther rolled down the window. Yeah? He asked. Thanks for stopping. I'm looking for my daughter. I think she might hide in your RV. Could you please take a quick look to see if she's there? Sure. He stood up while Marita walked around to the other side. He opened the door from inside and she rushed in. The interior was dark, smelling of new upholstery and fresh wood, but Marita's sensitive nose detected a mustier odor beneath it she couldn't quite identify. Alice? Alice? Are you here, honey? Plastic sheets covered the furniture in the mobile home, and they taped the overhead cabinet door shut. She pried it open with force, but Alice wasn't inside. Where had she gone?
Hey, take it easy, said the man, sounding a bit upset.
Nothing. Discouraged, Marita slumped down. She felt as though her daughter was near, that she had to be somewhere inside. But she hadn't made herself invisible, after all. I'm sorry, but she doesn't seem to be here, the man said, wrapping his arm around her shoulder. His grip was overly tight, but he was probably just as confused.
Thanks anyway.
Listen, I'd love to help, but I need to get this RV to Hamburg in 2 hours, you understand?
Sure.
I'm sure the gas station attendant can assist you.
Yes,
Marita replied, overwhelmed with worry.
I'm sure she's around here somewhere,
the young man said encouragingly. Marita looked at him.
Yes, I'm sure she is. Thanks for your help.
With that, she stormed out, heading back to the gas station. Gunther closed the door from the inside and returned to the driver's seat of the RV before driving off. Alice lay stunned in the small hutch next to the toilet, her teddy bear limp in her little arm. The boy leaned against her, also unconscious. Up in the cab, Gunther maneuvered the vehicle into the endless stream of northbound traffic.
Two little buggers, he thought happily. This is going to be a party.
Next morning. About a month after Leonie disappeared, Ruth began her nightly conversations with John Lennon. These happened on the crosswalk of Abbey Road near the famous studios where the Beatles recorded their iconic music from 1962 to 1969. Ruth wasn't a fan of the Beatles. She preferred the Rolling Stones. As a teenager, she cheered for Nana while wearing her now legendary Stones t-shirt, and she developed a musical crush on Mick Jagger, sparked by 99 Red Balloons. However, her infatuation didn't compare to her admiration for artists like Pat Benatar, Kim Wilde, Cyndi Lauper, Madonna, and Melissa Etheridge. During this time, Ruth discovered she was more attracted to women, and not just in music. This realization made it difficult for her to reconcile her feelings about John Lennon and his somewhat twisted humor that had invaded her dreams. She stopped questioning why she was conversing with a long-dead musician from Liverpool in her dreams. Ruth heard the chirping of sparrows and opened her eyes. She found herself in her favorite armchair, positioned in the middle of the crosswalk on London's Abbey Road. Looking at the asphalt, she recognized the faded paint from the 60s. Glancing over her right shoulder, she spotted the iconic white VW Beetle, made famous by the Abbey Road album. Her birthday, Friday, August 8, 1969, was the day this dream occurred. John, not dressed in his white suit from the album cover, squatted by the gutter wearing dark pants and a leather jacket reminiscent of the Hamburg Star Club era. He looked tense and confused. "Hi, John."
"Hello, love."
His mood was way off today.
"What's wrong?"
Ruth asked, accustomed to John's full attention in her dreams. He cracked his knuckles in boredom.
"There are a couple of kids missing."
"More than one? Shit," muttered Ruth. John shrugged.
"That's just how life goes, love.
Can you tell me anything about the dead kid, John?"
"He's dead?"
"John."
"All right, fine, Mum. The boy's name is Bjorn Eggert. He's not from your shabby little town."
"Thanks, John."
"What are imaginary friends for?" He shot back with a wry grin.
"How many more have disappeared?" Ruth pressed.
"I don't know."
"You're not being very helpful, John."
"Hey, what do you expect? I'm just a dead beetle."
He raised his hands, and everything spun in Ruth's head. That marked the end of their conversation. Soon she would wake up, but she needed to hurry with her questioning.
"Maybe you can still save them,"
John declared as he stood up and brushed the dust off his clothes.
"But how?"
Ruth asked desperately, her vision blurring. John began to saunter away but turned back one last time.
"Talk to Marie."
Ruth's breath caught in her throat.
"I can't. I can't do that, John."
John sighed.
"Then the kids are as good as dead."
2 hours later, while she was in the shower, her cell phone rang. It was Ulbrich. He informed her that the coroner had not yet provided lab results and that no child was missing in all of Lüneburg County. A nationwide inquiry would have uncovered 10 cases, and he rattled off the names.
"And the last boy's name is Bjorn Eggert."
The temperature in her small bathroom dropped a few degrees as she stared at her reflection, blurred by steam.
"Last name again, please?" she croaked into the phone.
"Bjorn Eggert. He's from Potsdam. He's been missing for 2 days.
She closed her eyes.
"Hello?"
Ulbrich asked on the other end of the line.
"Okay," Ruth replied.
"Good work, Ulbrich. Listen, I need to get down to the station right away. I'll see you later."
"Hey, I was thinking I..."
Ruth ended the call and rubbed her hair dry.
"Talk to Marie,"
John's voice whispered in her mind.
I can't. I can't do that, John."
"Then the kids are as good as dead."
"Shit," she uttered softly in her quiet bathroom.
John Lennon waits in black and white to discuss the things she can't hide. Abby. Missing pieces. spaces in between. The dead can speak if we just listen, providing answers that we're seeking. Secrets waiting to be revealed.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital audiobook podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.